welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm your host, Lydia Johnson. This week, House Ag Committee Chairman G.T. Thompson joins the show to discuss a newly unveiled ag labor reform bill. And Animal and Plant Inspection Service Undersecretary Dudley Hoskins comes to the studio to discuss USDA's New World Screwworm response. But first, here are this week's headlines. President Donald Trump has lifted duties on Moroccan phosphate. In a move that drew cheers from farm groups, the eighth-month order directs the Treasury and Commerce Departments to use their authority under the Tariff Act of 1930 to suspend the nearly 20% countervailing duties which had been requested by U.S. phosphate manufacturers Mosaic and Simplot. Facing surging fertilizer prices due to the war with Iran, dozens of farm groups called for an end to the duties on June 1st, with an analysis concluding that the countervailing duties on Moroccan phosphate raised input costs for farmers of corn, soybeans, wheat, rice, sorghum, and cotton by roughly $6.9 billion over the 2021 through 2025 growing seasons. House Ag Committee Chairman G.T. Thompson unveiled the Save America's Workforce Act this week. He joined us in the studio to discuss what's included in that bill.
Lydia, it's a great bill. It's a bill that was written really by the agricultural stakeholders for agriculture stakeholders. Whether it was through the input that we got traveling the nation, really preparing for the farm bill, but ag labor always came up as a concern in all 160 listening sessions that I did. Or it was the work group that was put together. And so taking that input, the findings that bipartisan ag labor work group that we did in last Congress, in the House Agriculture Committee, we were able to put this framework together really to modernize the H-2A program, which is really important. When H-2A was, even back 1996, this is a program actually that hasn't been updated since Ronald Reagan was president of the United States. It is designed so that there's an emphasis of finding domestic workers first, American citizens. But that just hasn't occurred. The change in the past 20 years has been significant. And so without a modernized H-2A program, actually what we're seeing is crops left to rot in the field, dairy farms that go out of business because they just don't have the workforce.
And you mentioned those dairies, but with this bill, it would be the first time that dairies would actually have access to this H-2A program. I mean, what does it mean to have those year-round workers? For dairy, I spoke with a mushroom grower who said that they would have access for the first time. I mean, what does it mean to have that more year-round access for agriculture?
It's incredibly important. Dairies, mushrooms, greenhouses, livestock, there's just so many that would have access. And some processing, actually, the first part of processing, not food manufacturing, but everything prior to that. It's a significant need, and it's also a driving cost to agriculture today. Farmers you and I have talked a lot about all the challenges that our farmers face with increased inflation, the cost of inputs, trade, disruption, which means you can't get inputs or you perhaps lose markets or incur tariffs right now as the Trump administration works through trade. I will say that's very promising. There's, the Trump administration has formalized 19 trade agreements during 18 months. So that's really promising. But this is the cost is a significant factor. When the H-2A program was first started, a lot of farmers were quoted as saying, it saved us from bankruptcy. And what they're saying today, because of how the cost of that adverse effect wage rate has increased exponentially, especially under the Biden administration, a lot of them are saying, this is why I'm going bankrupt, is because of the H-2A program.
We'll be back with more Newsmakers right after this.
As a cooperative, our customers are our owners. They share our profits and help guide our business. We're not just another lender. We're Farm Credit, and we're here for you.
Think so? some of sustainability to farmers just comes second nature. If you asked a farmer, are you sustainable, they'd probably look at you maybe a little funny and say, I don't think I'm doing anything that special, but it really is just what they do. We're all farmers, and our goal is taking the best care of our land, our cattle, our natural resources.
This
is my sustainability story.
More than 400 organizations are supporting the Save Agriculture's Workforce Act, but ultimately, the House Ag Committee doesn't have jurisdiction over immigration. I asked House Ag Committee Chairman G.T. Thompson about the conversations he's had with Judiciary Chairman Jim Jordan about a path forward for the bill.
I think the feedback that I get is he appreciates how different this bill is from previous attempts. And I was very supportive of previous attempts. Chairman Goodlatte, who was Judiciary Chair, former Agriculture Chair, he had two pieces of legislation. And then, of course, the Workforce Modernization Act that was just a couple years ago. The problem was it didn't have unified support among the agriculture industry. The difference with this one and all those past, which is, I think, very helpful with Chairman Jordan, is the industry is completely unified, that this is the bill that that they've been waiting for.
Yeah, and you've got to think you've kind of done the heavy lifting to get all those stakeholders in line. Yeah. I mean, is this something that you could see, or have there been conversations about slipping into, you know, some broader piece of legislation within the lame duck later this year?
Well, I certainly hope that we'll find a vehicle for it, because we can't wait for this. This is food security is national security, and workforce is a key issue of whether, farmers are successful or whether they fail, because they just can't find the workforce that they need, or they can't afford under the current H-2A regulations, issues. I think another very positive aspect of this, and I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I think Chairman Jordan would look very positive the fact that we're actually codifying what President Trump has done. You know, a year ago when he made the adjustments to the adverse effect wage rate, and most recently, just days ago, when he identified dairy as being eligible to be used for the H-2A program. Those are all things that we're absolutely codifying. And it's important that we do that, right? I mean, as good as the things are that President Trump and his team has put in place through executive actions, they may only last till the end of his administration. And things that have some permanency, some certainty going forward, which is what our farmers need, is when we do it legislatively.
And as you wrap up here, President Donald Trump sent his request for a supplemental spending package to Congress last week, and that included $11 billion in farm aid spending. I know you've been very vocal. We've spoken about this many times, that additional farm aid is needed. But the farm aid and year-round E15 were both included in that package. But as you look ahead and just to the dynamics in Congress, I mean, are you confident that your colleagues, other lawmakers, will see the value in this and that it will stay in as this package is developed?
I certainly hope so. I mean, I haven't really seen, I've got my own thoughts on how that money would be divided up for the additional economic assistance. That is just a bridge payment. You know, we don't want to be in the habit of subsidizing our agriculture. But the problem is with inflation, with the challenges, with the tariffs, the temporary loss of markets, perhaps, our farmers are having a very difficult time, and we need to keep them farming. So this is just meant to be a bridge. And the good news is the destination point's already been built. That's already in law. Those programs are just now kicking in this fall. And of course, the remaining part of it is the Farm Food and National Security Act Farm Bill that is in the very capable hands of Chairman John Bozeman. And I have complete confidence he'll find a way to get 60 votes for that. And we'll work out our differences in conference committee. So the destination point, you know, the bridge, that's what we're building a bridge for with these economic assistance. Obviously, feel very strongly that we have provided less economic assistance, especially crops, than what we should. Those are significant. I know row crops are, you know, they're massive. They're very, very important. But would you look at the sheer number of specialty crops we have across this country? It must be about 1,000, and how diverse they are, and how important they are to, you know, nutritious food and health. We also need to be paying greater attention to the specialty crop farmers. We've done that with the farm bill that we put forward. I think the economic assistance needs to reflect that as well.
Yeah, and I know originally we talked and you said that figure of additional farming that those producers would need before the farm bill, those increase in reference prices goes into effect, you had kind of set a figure of closer to $20 billion. And this is obviously less than that, but I take it what you can get situation. But, you know, how would you like to see that divided between specialty crops and row crops? And, you know, do you think more aid is needed than what's in this package?
Yeah, I mean, if I, any influence I may have, I certainly, if let's just say that, you know, the president's recommendation will go with $10 billion. I'd like to say that, see that at this point being five and five, you know, five to finish out the needs of the row crops and a $5 billion invested within our specialty crops. I hope that's what occurs. I think that's what's warranted, you know, based on my travels and interactions with our farmers.
We'll be back with more newsmakers, but first, Grace Miller looks at H-2A positions certified by state. And this week's Map It Out.
This map tracks the percentage change in H-2A positions from the first half of 2025 to the first half of 2026. The H-2A program allows foreign nationals to fill temporary agricultural jobs. Washington stands out with a sharp increase, rising from roughly 15,000 positions in the first half of last year to more than 25,000 this year, according to the American Farm Bureau Federation. New Mexico and Maine also saw steep increases, each in the 60% range. Meanwhile, Florida, Nevada, and Arizona saw declines. Arizona dropped the most, down 16%. For AgriPulse, I'm Grace Miller.
I've worked at Coca-Cola for 21 years.
We're delivering Dr. Pepper from our brand new facility in Dallas, Texas.
We're really proud to still make Pepsi products in America.
You don't need a college degree to work here, but I put four kids through college by working here.
This is a great place to work with great people and great American brands.
Grocery stores, convenience stores, restaurants, they all depend on us.
We deliver great paying jobs.
We deliver beverages people love.
We deliver for our community.
For 35 years, soybean farmers have invested together to build demand for U.S. soy at home and around the world. Through the Soy Checkoff, farmers turn every dollar into stronger markets for U.S. soybeans, driving innovation and partnerships across feed, food, fuel, sustainable production, and beyond, led by farmers and built to last. U.S. Soy, 35 years of delivering value back to the farm and investing in the future of agriculture.
USDA Undersecretary of Animal and Plant Inspection Service, Dudley Hoskins, largely oversees the Agriculture Department's response to New World Screwworm. He joined us in the studio to share an update on how USDA is combating the parasite.
The work that USDA has been doing on screwworm goes back to the 1950s, or even before that. Some ARS researchers developed the sterile insect technique, and that's been a tool that we've used from the 50s to the 60s to the 90s to current day to eradicate the screwworm from North America, Mexico, Central America, and kept it in south of the Panama, the Darien Gap, for over 20 years. So we have that tool, we know it works, and that continues to be our focus on where we're going. A lot of things to talk about just in terms of facilities, modernization, innovations, but right now, we're looking at 29 current domestic detections in the U.S. 28 of those are in Texas. From June 3rd, when we had our first detection, APHIS has been on the ground working with our partners at the Texas Animal Health Commission, leading that emergency response. A lot of state, federal entities, a lot of industry partners. It's been a whole of government approach. And we continue to do everything we can to mitigate the impact of not just the screwworm on livestock, which we know is a priority for us, but for all the potential host and wildlife included.
Yeah, and I know our viewers, a lot of farmers and ranchers are hearing, you know, over two dozen of those cases now. But, you know, you've been on the ground in Texas quite a few times, from my understanding. But, you know, are there movement restrictions now for those producers, or is that something that you're considering or discussing?
Yeah, such an important question. So we have the New World Screwworm Playbook that we developed over the last year and a half. A lot of feedback from our industry partners about how we would implement it, how we would respond to it. We made some modifications to that playbook earlier this year. But one of the critical pieces is about the movement of potentially infested animals. So we have infested zones, we have surveillance zones. We support our state lead agencies and how they implement those treatment protocols and inspections. But the bottom line is there's no prohibition on movement. It's just if you're in an area that's been impacted, you just have to go through certain steps to move your animals out of your facility.
Yeah. And how about that trade space? I mean, has New World Screwworm caused foreign import restrictions so far? Or is that something that, you know, I'm sure you have on your radar, but that you're anticipating as well?
Yeah, we do. We've seen some of our trading partners, including Canada, Mexico, take certain actions restricting imports of U.S. animals from certain areas into their countries. And fundamentally, that's really why the playbook and the response is so important. We know how to beat this thing. We know how to mitigate the impacts and the movement of the fly and the maggots. We do that through implementation of the playbook, through treatment and through inspections. And once we do that and we can demonstrate that that's effective, that's really critical for us to be able to, for our trading partners to see and revisit some of those prohibitions.
Yeah, and you've noted USDA has said that it'll take roughly 500 million sterile flies to eradicate New World Screwworm in the U.S. and similar technology that we've been using, you know, since the first time this the fly was identified. But currently, production is only about 200 million flies between the Panama and Mexico facilities. I mean, is the current effort constrained by that lack of production capacity? And you know, how quickly will USDA really be able to scale up to meet that need?
We've been doing a couple things. Obviously, we have the COPEG facility in Panama. We're producing 100 million sterile flies per week there currently. Last weekend, the Secretary Rollins was in Mexico at the Matapa ribbon cutting with President Sheinbaum and her counterpart in Mexico, Secretary Lopez. Such a critical milestone to bring that facility online. As Matapa, the construction's completed, it'll take some time to build the brood of sterile flies. But in the coming weeks, and certainly by the end of the year, we'll have 100 million sterile flies coming out of Matapa. So while all of that is happening, we're still focused on more air base, which is part of the Secretary's initiative she launched last year. We are building that facility in record time. I know a lot of people have asked, you know, why is it so difficult and complex to get that facility operational? The reality is it's a BSL-2 plus facility. And so with that comes the infrastructure, the water, the power, all the complexities of that design structure. But grateful to our friends at the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers and Mortenson Construction for the not just the expedited timeline that we started with, but the process we're going through currently to see if we can shave even more time off that facility completion.
We'll be back with more newsmakers right after this.
I've worked at Coca-Cola for 21 years.
We're delivering Dr. Pepper for my brand new facility in Dallas, Texas.
We're really proud to still make Pepsi products in America.
You don't need a college degree to work here, but I put 4 kids through college by working here.
This is a great place to work with great people and great American brands.
Grocery stores, convenience stores, restaurants, they all depend on us.
We deliver great paying jobs.
We deliver beverages people love.
We deliver for our community.
America never stops. Thanks to the financial support of Farm Credit, neither do the farmers and ranchers who call her home. Since the beginning, we've been helping rural America show the world what hard work can achieve. But the job is far from over. And as rural America grows further, we'll be there.
Welcome back. It's no secret the U.S. cattle herd is at the lowest level since the 1950s, and consumers are feeling it with beef prices. That's partially because the Mexican border is closed to beef imports. I asked USDA Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service Undersecretary Dudley Hoskins for an update on conversations about partially reopening the southern border.
Yeah, it's a great question. We hear about it a lot from not just our producers and the border states, but just that entire system of how our industry works and the movement of animals from Mexico into the U.S., the genetics, all of that is really so critical for a healthy and vibrant U.S. cattle industry. When we look at the port reopening proposition, that's really tied to just what the risk assessment is in Mexico on the ground. And our partners at Senaseca, our APHIS equivalent, we've been working with them and for about a year and a half. They've done so much to improve the visibility, traceability, and surveillance in Mexico, not just in those northern border states, but even in the southern part of the country. And so that's a critical tool for us as we assess what is the risk of animal movement in Mexico. And that question is really tied to how and when we can revisit port reopening. So I would say where we are today is leaps and bounds better than where we were a year ago. But we have to remember it's not just the movement of cattle, right? We know that's a big focus for everybody, as it should be. There's also just the wildlife movement in Mexico and what that looks like, and some of the animals that have migration routes between Texas and Mexico, and how we get better visibility and control over some of that. There's also companion animals, and where are those, and are they domesticated or feral? All of those different potential vectors for the screw worm is something we're looking at and assessing daily with our partners at Senaseca. And as soon as we can all get to a place where we have a high degree of confidence, I think that will help inform how and when the port reopening will resume.
Yeah. And as we wrap up here, are you concerned that ranchers, you know, won't report detections due to the imposition of quarantines, and that could more broadly affect markets for the livestock sector?
Yeah, I think I love this quote by one of our partners at Texas Animal Health Commission. They were talking about all the different tools and treatments that FDA has approved over the last year or so, and grateful to the work that FDA has been doing on that. But they said the best thing you can do, the best thing you can put on your animals is your eyes. And so that inspection, management, visibility, there's really no substitute for it. Because the early detection and the early reporting is so critical for us to find where and when some of these incidents are happening, and they get sterile flies on the ground to knock it out. And if people are not reporting it, if they're trying to hide it, or if they think it's something they're just going to fix themselves, they're only going to make that problem set worse for themselves and their neighbors. So we really encourage people to please be diligent, be vigilant. When you see something, just say something. We will be there with our state partners to support you. We know how to do the work. We've done it before, we'll do it again.
With historically high beef prices and a shrinking U.S. cattle herd, ranchers are feeling the squeeze. Live cattle futures hit $251 per hundredweight in May, even as the national cattle inventory has declined every year since 2019. Cobank says those market pressures are creating an opportunity for dairy producers to raise beef on dairy calves, or animals from dairy cows crossbred with beef cattle, to capture revenue from both the dairy and beef markets. But Cobank notes a key challenge. Beef on dairy calves often bring a one-time payout, and there's financial incentive to sell them just days after birth. That could make it harder for dairies to maintain or rebuild their heifer inventory. For AgriPulse, I'm Grace Miller.
For 35 years, soybean farmers have invested together to build demand for U.S. soy at home and around the world. Through the Soy Checkoff, farmers turn every dollar into stronger markets for U.S. soybeans, driving innovation and partnerships across feed, food, fuel, sustainable production, and beyond, led by farmers and built to last. U.S. Soy, 35 years of delivering value back to the farm and investing in the future of agriculture.
I was kind of known as the sheep guy around here. The fire went from north to south, and it blew that way, and it went straight down the house. Lost all of our sheep literally a week before we were to start lambing. And I was really in a bad place. I happened to notice this farm state of mind piece of paper. And I picked up my cell phone and I made a phone call, and that was the best phone call in my life. I'm glad that I'm still here. So don't do something permanent over a temporary situation.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Both the House and Senate are in recess next week, and USDA's crop progress report will be released on Monday. For AgriPulse, I'm Lydia Johnson. Thanks for watching.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more. For agriculture, trade, food, environment, and regulatory news, your source is AgriPulse.com.